Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise, another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. Now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Joe Montaldo. Tonight's guest is going to be Lynn Katai. Most of y'all should be familiar with her. We affectionately like to call her the Phoenix Lights Lady these days, but she's done quite a lot of work in Phoenix. Looking forward to talking to her, especially since we have our own investigators out in the area. It makes it a little easier for me because now I can compare notes. I've read some of her work. I've talked to her when I was at the X conference. She's a very formidable lady. I think she'll make a great guest tonight. So in a few minutes, I want all y'all to welcome her. A couple of things I wanted to talk about right quick and the American Astronomical Society yesterday, it announced that, y'all know about binary stars. Originally, they said that it was impossible for planets, Earth-like planets, to form in binary stars. Well, not only have they found out they were wrong, but it seems that they can form 3 to 4 times faster in a binary star system versus a regular star system. So I found that interesting. That's another one of those science facts that science was once again wrong on. But they have corrected themselves, so you got to give science credit. You know, it is policing itself. So that always makes me feel better when I see them catch their own mistakes or admit to their own mistakes, I should say, because they tend to make a lot of them, and they don't tend to admit to all of them. So anytime they admit to... Also, NASA's Stardust spacecraft. I don't know how many of y'all were familiar with the Stardust spacecraft. It's the one that went out to the comet and retrieved the particles and bringing it back. It will be bringing them back real soon, I believe. I think it's January 15th. It's due to put its probe back in our atmosphere. Now, this is the first time we've ever done this, ladies and gentlemen. This is the first time we've gone out and collected particles like this and brought them back to our planet. The U.S. is the first time it's done it, not including the Apollo missions and the moon rocks. But this is the first time we've ever done anything like this. Now, I find this very fascinating that at first this spacecraft flew 2.88 billion miles to collect round trip collecting this dust and is bringing it back to our planet. But are we sure that NASA took the right precautions that, you know, this dust is sterilized, there's no way it can contaminate the atmosphere or leak or cause any harm to anyone on the planet? I mean, this is, after all, materials that's not native to our planet and we are not familiar with it. So I was just curious. I haven't really heard much on what NASA's done to ensure our safety on these. But it is interesting to watch them pull these programs together and get this together because, you know, it's something that keeps people interested in space program. We may actually learn or gain some decent knowledge from these expeditions. You know, I'm all in favor for robotic expeditions with NASA. Of course, I don't think we should do away with the manned program because the manned program is what actually gets people involved. To be honest with you, you know, it's like the rovers. There were a lot of people interested in the rovers, but way less than NASA originally expected. They really expected a much bigger viewing audience initially than what they had. And that's due, it was a robotic mission. Now, if that would have been a man standing on the planet, now this is CNN's number. CNN said if we landed a man on Mars, they would guess that between 90 and 95% of the population of the planet would watch the landing, which would generate quite a lot of interest in the space program all the way around the board, not just ours, but in several space programs. So it's something I wanted to bring up because, you know, you know how I am about NASA and the U.S. Space Agency and the Russian Space Agency. It's really kind of feel that they really have let us down in many, 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 many ways. So I feel it's our job as taxpayers to kind of keep an eye on them and police what they're doing and what they're not doing. I mean, come on, guys, we're footing this $120 billion bill to go to Mars, so don't you think we should have a little say in what goes on? You know, it doesn't have to be all politics, be all military. There's enough of us in the country that follow the space program that we can dictate what happens with these missions. So that's something else for y'all to think about. You know, I don't want to sound like an activist, but sometimes you got to speak up. You know, mass emails, mass phone calls, petitions, things along those lines help and always work. So I just wanted you to know that. You know, it's something to think about. But I know Jeff has informed me that we have Lynn in the queue. So, Lynn, can you hear me?
Lynn here.
Okay, good evening, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, Lynn Kitai. I am pronouncing your right last name correctly, or am I not? Correct?
Like a key and a tie. Key tie.
Okay, I wanted to make sure right, because I'll say it several times, and I just wanted to make sure I'm saying it right.
Dr. Lynn is just fine, thanks.
Okay, let me get you to tell the listening audience a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this, and then we'll start the interview from there. So,
actually, it's quite amazing and wonderful and exciting and also intriguing. I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all. I am a medical doctor. Actually devoted my life's work for almost 30 years now to community education. I started at NBC and Philadelphia doing health tips for the community. A syndication grew from that. Worked with NBC in Phoenix, Arizona as well, USA Cable. And by 85, I was seeing teens in my private practice drowning in substance abuse. I wanted to do something productive to wake them up to the reality of substance abuse and started producing video and workbook curriculums. I have a company, Health Education Learning Programs, and which is very ironic that I have been actually out of my own heart and pocket dedicating my life's work to community education, actually imparting the reality of vital health issues. But when this issue fell in my lap, and literally in 95 and figuratively, my husband, who's also a physician, and I had a very close sighting to our home in Paradise Valley. We live mountainside in Paradise Valley, Arizona, and we have a panoramic view of the city skyline, so we get to enjoy and appreciate lights that are out there, whether they're street lights or car lights or plane lights or helicopters or whatever. And what we experienced on February 6, 1995, was quite different than anything we'd ever seen. Actually, it was a very close sighting, just yards, about 100 yards from our home, in a private gated area. And I always go back to this sighting when people say, oh, could it be military? Well, there's no way that it was military in the area we live. And what we saw were actually three amber orbs in a triangle formation, like a pyramid, one on top and two closely aligned underneath. And if anybody would like to take a peek at some of the pictures, they're on my website, www.thephoenixlights.net. At any rate, we did experience them. I did get pictures of them, but I didn't even know who to show it to because I had no interest or knowledge, or nor did my husband, who's also a physician, in this topic. So I just wondered for 2 years what the heck we saw. I mean, this was obviously advanced technology I didn't know we had on Earth, and I did get pictures of it. And then 2 years later, these orbs, and I call them orbs because the light did not extend outside the edge. They were self-contained, and the color within each orb was very different. I mean, I really took a mental note because it was so extraordinary, a sight of what they looked like, the size, the shape. They were about 3 to 6 feet each. They were oval-shaped, like an egg on its side. They were uniform color throughout, very different than anything I'd ever seen. They didn't glare at all. Every other light out there, immediately I noticed, glared. And when each of them disappeared, I have to tell you, I mean, it seemed that not only was there an intelligent presence watching as we were watching them, but when each one disappeared, it seemed as if it didn't go anywhere, that it was still there, but we just didn't see it. And the only thing I can relate it to as a scientist is that it went into another dimension. But at any rate, I wondered for 2 years what this technology was, why we saw it, and et cetera. And we can get into that more if you like. But at any rate, they reappeared again 2 years later, 2 months before a mass sighting throughout the state, which we can talk about in detail, but 2 months before, which is very important, actually, data for this whole thing, I happened to catch the same formation, mile wide at least, formation of these orbs in an equidistant line, head on, six pictures in a row, head on, turning into a V-shape, what people would describe 2 months later during a mass sighting. And it was so unnerving that I actually called around the next morning and found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport who had seen the same thing, did not show up on radar. They didn't know what it was, and it was in restricted airspace. And we started conversing, and I continued taking pictures of these orbs in different formations up to and including March 13th, 1997, where thousands of people, and this is really important to note, thousands of people were outside on a very clear, quiet night, looking skyward, purposely to catch a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet, which was very clear in the northwest sky. When they also saw, and this is throughout the state, and actually I just met with an airline pilot today who emailed me yesterday that she had seen the same formation in Las Vegas. And I have now that I've come out with not only the book but the documentary, which we can get into, I've had so many emails from people not only from Nevada but also New Mexico who were seeing these phenomena at the same time that we were seeing them throughout the state. So whoever did this, when thousands of people were purposely looking up at the sky, obviously wanted to be seen. And we're talking about witnesses that saw either these orbs, these lights that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what it was attached to, as if there was a force field in between these lights holding them together, or they were attached to something. And some people actually report that they saw a craft, that they saw gunmetal on the bottom, that it was that low, very low altitude, very slow. Most people described it as 30 miles an hour. Some people did see it take off at a tremendous speed. Technology that, you know, it was just extraordinary. And certainly what was most profound to me is that not only for myself but for others, it really changed their worldview and changed their lives dramatically afterwards. And there is so much to this story, but there's a lot more to this story than March 13th, which we can get into if you like.
I've read up quite a bit on you, and you know, well, the Phoenix Lights I've always followed, mainly because we have a big following of ICAR members in Phoenix, or in Arizona, I should say. I shouldn't say just in Phoenix, but we have a large base of members in the Arizona area, so they're always sending us photos or catching things. And
there's a lot of things going on here to this day. I mean, I have photos, again, on my website that are extraordinary. I mean, formations and things that are unusual that to this day, and I took extreme lengths, because I have to tell you that, again, I knew nothing about this, and it wasn't until I happened to catch the three lights above the city on footage the night of March 13th, and had already set up an appointment with a MUFON international MUFON UFO investigator. The morning I walk into his house, the morning after the mass sighting, unbeknownst to me, there was a mass sighting, and he asked me if I had seen, you know, the formation, and I said, well, you know, it was the same formation in the same location as 2 months before that I had described to him. He said, no, you don't understand. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people saw this formation or a craft throughout the state for hours, and his phone was ringing off the hook, and NBC was going to be there in a half an hour. And I said, whoa, I said, I worked with NBC in the early 80s, and, you know, they might know who I am, and I don't know what we're dealing with here. And this isn't about me. It's about the data. It could be military. It could be a hoax, whatever. You know, why don't you take a copy of the footage and share it with the media? I'm, you know, happy for people to see what we had seen. And from 4:30 that next afternoon, my video was plastered on every news station. Only a handful of us had gotten video, been able to capture video that night, because for the most part, when it went over people's heads, even though some people did try to take pictures of it, it was dark. It blocked out the stars, so they weren't really able to get anything that was viable photographically. So I was thrilled that I had gotten something, and in the meanwhile, didn't know what to do with what I had, because I had accumulated, you know, quite a bit of footage by then, and the pictures from 2 months before, the 35 millimeter, and found out a week after the mass sighting, and this was the first I had heard of it, that this was happening worldwide at a faster pace, very similar phenomena. And that really blew me away, because I knew nothing about this. And once I heard that it was happening worldwide and that other countries were much more open to this as being unearthly, that really set me on a journey to find out what was going on. And I pushed my entire professional life aside. I don't know if people out there know that, your audience knows that, but I actually pushed my entire medical practice aside for 4 years to try to find a logical source of meaning for what I witnessed and photographed, and I have yet to find it. If anything, my inquiry really opened up a whole new world to me, and I felt obliged to share it. Again, going back to my life's work, this is what I do. I educate people to the reality of vital health issues, but this is certainly a very important reality to share as well.
This is something the public needs to be educated on. It's one of the goals of the organization I work with these days. You know, it's interesting because there's so much that goes on in Arizona that our Arizona state director there decided we needed a separate website from the main website in Arizona. But it's like Gulf Breeze. Same thing in Florida. Matter of fact, we were just in Gulf Breeze this past weekend, and it's rare that you go down there that you don't see something. It's a weird place to go. And I tell people all the time now, if you really want to see something, there are places in the United States, or for that matter, anywhere in the world,
sure,
as you go, if you've got a little patience, you will see something.
For sure, for sure. And being open-minded, I mean, that's the first step. And the reason that, you know, I ended up 4 years later with a 750-page journal. I mean, I really took great lengths to find out what was going on, really do my homework, and also went down to the University of Arizona Sciences Department, Optical Sciences, Consciousness Studies Department, Arizona State University, Mathematics, Geology, Anthropology, Astronomy, trying to find out what was going on and have my things analyzed, have my photographs analyzed, went to the Brooks Institute of Photography, world-renowned, and across the board, not only couldn't my pictures be explained, but they couldn't be denied. And everybody was just as intrigued with, you know, what the heck is going on here. And at any rate, that really set me on a journey. And 4 years later, I ended up with a 750-page journal and had to decide, you know, am I going to come forward with this information or not? And certainly didn't need to do this. But for whatever reason, I really needed to share and, like you said, educate others. That's been my passion for 25 years, especially young people. And once the book came out, which I squeezed down that 750 pages to 220, called The Phoenix Light, The Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, and had such an overwhelming response to it, which I really appreciate, and others appreciate the hard work that went into it. I was approached by a filmmaker to do a documentary, and I didn't have time. I was working. By then, I had gone back to work. I was working full-time as a chief clinical consultant at the world-renowned Arizona Heart Institute, the Wellness and Imaging Center, where they do heart scans, and loving my job and also very, very busy with the book and doing Barnes & Noble and Border presentations. And yet, in the middle of everything, not only was the filmmaker, Steve Lanz, very, very persistent, but I was invited to speak at a school, which really was a sign for me, because here I was at a middle school with over 200 students on the edge of their chairs. I mean, you could hear a pin drop. It was unbelievable how thirsty these young people are for this information. And I realized there's really a chunk of history missing from our history books. And it's time that, you know, we get this information out there and address it and accept it and study it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because anytime I meet anybody like me who's willing to put their lives on the line for this, if you have a career, especially a career, let's say, where this would really hurt you, such as the career you have, right? See, for me, I live in the Bible Belt. I'm in New Orleans. So, by the way, I had your book, but I think Hurricane Katrina did that for me along with about two other ones.
Uh-oh.
But, Yeah, we used to keep a UFO library here for the locals if they wanted to come read or something.
Mm-hmm.
We still have probably about 200, but we lost about 200 in the storm. But
I'll have to get you some books.
Well, we'll get them. We'll get them back. But the thing of it is anytime I meet anybody that's willing to step up and put their, because you know, basically you put your career on the line. It's like the first time I ever made the local newspaper, I realized right then and there when I walked into my bank and they were like, hey, it's the UFO guy.
Right.
Oh, man, I'm in trouble because, you know, a lot of my customers are very religious. A lot of my customers are, you know, deep old South people, and, you know, this kind of stuff is really weird to them. Well, at least that was my view at the time. Well, come to find out, after about 3 days of walking around the city and everybody saying there's a UFO guy, that most of these people had a very keen interest in this, and it really didn't
matter
what age they were. They really wanted to know.
Absolutely. I have to tell you, I was really blown away because, again, I mean, I took a giant risk coming forward. And I also knew if I didn't come forward as myself, I wasn't going to get the book published. And, you know, at this point, I really just wanted to get the information out there, did a lot of soul searching and didn't know what reaction there was going to be. Well, I have to tell you, since the book came forward and certainly since the documentary was finished, because then I decided after I spoke at the school and realized, you know, this is my passion is education, especially for young people. I really needed to do a visual as well and have the witnesses and retired military, and actually we have a fella in the documentary who asked for a transfer to Luke Ash Force Base because he heard about the Phoenix Lights, and he's actually been filming the Phoenix Lights through the years since he's come here, and other experts in the field to share from their own experiences, and that has been an incredible success. We won the New York International Film Festival Best Director Award, and we just recently won the 2005 Sci-Fi International Film Festival Best Documentary Award, and we have some other screenings as well, and it's just been a joy, and I was surprised too. I mean, as you said, I started receiving dozens and dozens and dozens, hundreds of emails from people throughout the world that had experienced something that's real to them. And I have to say, I mean, as a physician, there is healing to be had here. Many people have experienced something and they're afraid to talk about it, and they might think they're crazy, and I have to say that most things can be explained, but there is a small percentage of things that cannot. And just because we might not have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean they're not real. And, you know, it took 17 centuries, think about that one, for us to realize after the advent of the microscope that there are zillions of microorganisms, tiny microorganisms all around us, even in our bodies. And just recently we discovered that there are electromagnetic energies around every living cell that helped us develop the MRI, the magnetic resonance imaging machine. Well, again, just because we can't see these tiny living entities or the electromagnetic energies or gamma rays or radio waves and so many other things, it doesn't mean they're not real. So it's time we get this out in the open and we start addressing it and accepting that we are not alone.
Well, we work on it hard every day.
I'm sure you do.
Oh, we got people now working and on this, and thanks to Stardust Radio, that we have the radio show as well, which helps out quite a lot. Oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're inside the virtual auditorium, if you would like to see the pictures Lynn and I are talking about, you can. Our site is posted right at the top up there. Help yourself. Just click the link and go. If you're outside listening via the radio, I'll get her to give you the address one more time. Why don't you give it to them right quick, Lynn, so if they want to go look while we're... Because we're ready to go to break in a few minutes so they can surf while we're going to break.
It's thephoenixlights.net. And they can look at some pictures. They can also look at a couple of interviews that I did for Fox and MSNBC. And also the two-minute trailer for the documentary is on there. And if they're interested in getting the book through Amazon.com, which has a great price, or a signed copy or the documentary, they can do that as well.
Yeah, I'll be sure. Go check it out. I mean, I've seen a lot of the photos. They're really nice. No, it's interesting because two of our investigators that live down there got some photos just recently. They'll be posting those as well. When they do, I'll send you an email and you can...
Sounds great.
But, you know, being that what you do for a living, you didn't get any hard feedback, because I do catch a little flack from some of my customers. not so much the customers that I'm doing work for, but more along, I should say, the vendors. And they do give me a little flack about it. I think it's more in good nature than it is anything else, because most of them always ask me questions. But I do find, you know, it is a lot better than it was 10 years ago.
Absolutely. I have to tell you, I could not have come forward 5 years ago. That's how bad the environment was. I think 9/11, as horrible as it was, did jolt people's consciousness to realize that there's a lot more to reality than what we think. And it really has opened a lot of people up to at least listen and at least learn. And that's what all this is about. I mean, it really is to open us up so we can move forward in our own evolution. I mean, there is a very profound message here that people are getting worldwide from these phenomena. Not only the unexplained aerial phenomena, but in my book, I found very interesting as I was inquiring with witnesses. Are you going to take a break soon, or can I go into this for a minute?
Hey, we're getting ready to go probably in about 30 seconds. We're going to probably...
Oh, okay, well, let's come back, because I found a connection between all unexplained phenomena, and I really did a scientific study of that at university level, which I'd love to share with your listeners, that really, really proves that not only aren't we alone, but we're all connected. And there's also a very profound, important message to all these experiences that people are really having worldwide.
But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we got to take a break. So I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 60. I'm your host, Joe Montaldo, and we'll return with Lynn Tittai to take some questions from the virtual audience. So please stay tuned.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
SRN 1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Good evening, and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't want to use the virtual auditorium and you're on the radio side, you'd like to give us a call, the toll-free number is 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Also, if you're in Riverside, Iowa, and you would like to pester Jeff, you can call him at the local studio audience number at 485-143. I suggest y'all call in, aggravate the man. He's been kind of quiet in the background today. Anyway, Lynn, we're going to just pick up from where we left off break. And, you know, first off, one quick question. Now, I know for this, I've experienced this myself, so I do understand it's a profound thing. It's earth-changing. You can't help yourself. Now, what I wanted to ask you was, did you feel like it just kind of like just took your life over, consumed, and said, okay, I got to do this no matter what?
Good question, Joe. Yeah, you know, from the time the lights came back 2 years after our initial sighting in 95, and I was so curious about what it was, but, you know, at that point I really wasn't driven to inquire. I mean, I just didn't even know anyone that was involved with it, and when I finally did try to get someone that knew something about it 2 years later. I mean, this is how close I was. I have a friend of a friend had a neighbor who had a friend who knew the past president of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. I mean, I was really so far away from it all. But once the lights came back in January of 97, 2 months before the mass sighting, and the second night of which I caught this incredible array, six pictures in a row, and, you know, I have to say, I mean, it was just so unusual and so unnerving because it was so huge and strange that, you know, I really felt compelled and almost driven to take pictures every time they popped up in the sky, and that's why I have an incredible collection, because I really was on top of it. And I guess as a scientist, and that it was bringing out the scientist in me, I really wanted to document everything as much as I could. And then once I started, you know, keeping the journal and finding that, you know, once I started looking, I found such credible information from scientists worldwide. And you know, we talk about Dr. John Mack and Dr. Richard Haynes with the Foo Fighters in World War II and pilot reaction to these orbs. And, I mean, they've been around a long, long time. And Dr. Astronaut Edgar Mitchell, and on and on and on, that I started contacting Linda Moulton Howe, and, you know, just to find out information, because I knew nothing about this. The more I found out, the more I did get compelled to find out more information, and it just, you know, I pushed my entire professional life aside. I mean, that says something. I mean, I really, really wanted to find a logical explanation and have yet to do so. And when you realize that something really is going on that's extraordinary and special and that we haven't heard about. I mean, something's going on. And as a scientist, I really wanted to do my best to do a credible and professional job of finding that out. So, yes, I was definitely driven to find out what was going on. That was the one part of it. But once I did compile 750 pages of fabulous data that could not be denied, you know, I again had to do a lot of soul searching because I was taking a risk to come forward. But in good conscience, I couldn't stick what I had in a drawer. I continued to take pictures of these things and continued to try to find out what they were, and nobody knew. And, you know, it just came down to it that it just seemed too important to not come forward. And in that sense, yes, I was definitely driven to share, and also because it's my life's work. I mean, education is my thing, and really wanted to do a good job of getting doing the homework for everybody else. And now that that's done with the book, and then the documentary as well, which the documentary, by the way, is really an overview of the whole topic. The Phoenix Lights event itself sucked me into this whole thing, and I was starting to talk about some other intriguing roads that I started going on that I also felt compelled to investigate when I started interviewing other witnesses, and myself included. They would share with me that the Phoenix Lights reawakened a near-death experience that they had as children. And when it happened more than a handful of times, I thought, geez, you know, is there a possibility of a connection between all unexplained phenomena, be it near-death experience, out-of-body experience, unexplained aerial phenomena, that have a mystical light associated with the experience? And lo and behold, I found studies being done at university level. I mean, these are scientists, professors, Dr. Kenneth Ring at University of Connecticut, Dr. Stuart Tremblow at University of Kansas, et cetera, that were studying these phenomena, the connection between all unexplained phenomena for 20, 30 years. I had no idea. I had no idea people were studying these or that it even existed. And when I really looked at the data, I found that not only is the experience for all these different experiences very similar, and I outline that in the book, but the after effect, that's what really hit me. The after effect is so profound, so positive, a real awakening when somebody truly experiences one of these unexplained phenomena. And I started calling all unexplained phenomena UP, an up. because they are ups. The enlightenment, the awakening that happens is really to a soul level, and it's a very spiritual thing too. I know that there's a, you know, it might be a new twist for people, but whatever is happening worldwide with these unexplained phenomena is not only waking people up to what they're doing to the earth, what they're doing to each other, but also touching people at a very, very soul level, at a spiritual level, and really making people aware of and changing people's lives, transforming people. So I thought that was important to note and to share. And we, in the documentary as well as the book, I get into a real overview of the whole topic, including this, the history, and that's another thing. I mean, I had no idea the history of all this.
It's important, and, well, most people don't realize when I talk to them, they say, well, yeah, this started about 50 years ago. I said, oh, no, you better go do your homework.
Exactly. I mean, this is, you know, since human documentation, these phenomena have been around. And when you, you know, you look at cave drawings in primitive caves in Pakistan and whatever, and petroglyphs from indigenous societies, I mean, these, they depicted UFOs as we know them today back then, I mean thousands of years ago. So, you know, to think that they could imagine something like this, or are they actually drawing what they saw? Well, you know, I would think it would be the latter, only because where did they get the idea for something like that? Plus the fact in the Middle Ages there's lots of pictures that were paintings that were that had UFOs, what we would call UFOs in them now. So it's pretty interesting when you really look at the history. And the other thing that I alluded to before is that a lot of other countries, and we're talking India and Peru and even China, and other cultures, are much more open to these phenomena as being unearthly, even in the United States. I mean, there are native cultures right here that I've spoken with personally. It's part of their culture. They don't even think about it. I mean, there's two major mountains here, which intersect. The South Mountain, which is right behind the airport from our view, and a little further back, further from us, are the Estrella mountain ranges. Now, Estrella means star in Spanish. And in between these two mountain ranges where they intersect, where most of my photographs of these unexplained phenomena are occurring, which, you know, brings up the question, is there a gateway there, which is possible, I guess. But at any rate, the native culture there, the Gila Bend River Indian Reservation, is right there. It's very sacred ground. And they have admitted to me, there are residents there that shared with me that they have been looking up at these orbs for centuries.
Yeah, they have.
They call them sky beings, light beings, and they feel that they're very spiritual, that they're their ancestors, they're part of their culture, and they get very excited, and really it gives them a sense of not only a connection to their ancestry, but they, you know, it's just part of their culture. They don't, it's no big deal for them. And, you know, so that's really interesting to note. The other thing that you mentioned before that I think is really important, too, I've been really lucky. I mean, I have to tell you, I really have been overwhelmed and blessed by the response to my work, because it's very heartfelt, and I think people can appreciate that. But even more than that, even my co-workers at the Arizona Heart Institute and other doctors, I couldn't believe once I came forward, and they called me Dr. X for 7 years, by the way. Stayed anonymous for 7 years. Jim Delatoso and Mike Tanner, the main investigators here locally, they were the only ones that knew. I came to Jim 1 week after the mass sighting with the pictures that I had taken 2 months before, the 35 millimeter, and he had them in his possession, and I asked them, please stay anonymous, you know, keep this confidential, so I know what we're dealing with. And, you know, because they're such extraordinary photographs, you know, if we had gotten them out there without a name to them, they could have gotten lost in the shuffle or whatever. I just wanted to make sure I did my homework and before I came forward with them. And I have to tell you, to Jim's behalf, for anybody that knows Jim Dellatoso, not only is he a brilliant guy, but talk about integrity. I mean, he kept my stuff anonymous and confidential for 7 years until I came forward. And, you know, he got a lot of flack for that because there were a lot of investigators and other people in the field that couldn't understand how he could come to conclusions about the Phoenix Lights with just the videos that he had. And no one else had 35 millimeter but myself. So, but he was working on my 35 millimeter, analyzing those, and came to some really amazing conclusions that they did not fit into any earthly spectrum. I mean, he compared them to every other light spectrum out there, and you know, including car lights and street lights and helicopters and planes and stars and Hale-Bopp and et cetera, et cetera. And you know, and very thoughtfully and very meticulously analyzed the 35 millimeter. He caught a lot of flack for that. And I have to tell you, to this day, I am indebted that he kept it confidential, and I'm thrilled that now it's out in the open, and especially in the documentary we go into detail about his analysis. But and even Brooks Institute of Photography agrees that what he did was top notch. So so for that, I'm really you know, happy that's gotten out there. But on the other side, I've been really lucky. I have not had any flack. I've gotten a few emails from people that say, oh, they're definitely flares, they're definitely military or whatever, but I know what I saw in 95, and no matter what else happened, I saw these things up close and personal and got pictures of them, and no one can ever tell me that these were military. I mean, it's just impossible.
Well, that's one of the things I always love, Lynn, is how that people are going to try to force their view and try to make you see something that you know you didn't see.
Well, people, you know, that's the other thing, too. Luckily enough, I had pictures, you know, that you know, just show what was there, and they've been analyzed, and, you know, even Dr. Bruce McAbee showed them at the MUFON International Symposium in 1999, while I was still anonymous, as true unknowns. I mean, they cannot be explained. And what's really interesting, Joe, I have to interject, is that while my husband and I were looking at these close orbs, in the background, in the pictures, which been note for a couple of years, until I went back to the pictures, found that I had more pictures than I even thought I had because they were blank. They looked like they were blank, and found that indeed there were lights and orbs in the background in the same location as what happened 2 years later when my husband and I were looking at the close orbs. So I have documentation. I have photographic documentation of these identical phenomena in the identical formations 2 years before the mass sighting, when my husband and I were having the close sighting. And by the way, during the mass sighting, there were a number of witnesses that reported that they actually saw these orbs detach from the main object, go out into the environment for a time, and then redock with the main object. And, you know, is that what happened with my husband and I? I don't know, but it makes sense because in the background, while the orbs are disappearing, and I have pictures showing the orbs disappearing, close to us, the same formation of these orbs in a line are in the background disappearing as well. As 2 years later, 2 months before the mass sighting, same location, same phenomena, and during the mass sighting. And I also have pictures since the mass sighting that show these orbs in the same formation in the same location again. So, you know, I had mentioned the gateway. Is it possible? I guess so, or whatever, but it is what it is, and the data speaks for itself. And, you know, when people, and again, it's been just a handful, but, you know, if people argue, oh, it's military or there's an explanation, well, fine, tell me. You know, show me. Tell me what it is.
Quite impressed with your work. I followed it closely since it came out, and I've been quite impressed. You do your homework, and I tell it to, you don't know how many times I say this on an average day. do your homework. And I tell people who listen to me on this show, hear me speak anywhere, look, don't take me at face value, don't take me at my word, go do your homework. I'm sure they're tired of hearing it by now, but I'm going to keep repeating it until people start learning to do their homework. But, you know, we got to get some questions in because they're going to shoot us, Lynn, if we don't start taking
them. Oh, absolutely. I'd love to. And it's
quite a few in the audience.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
We're going to start with TRMT137. Why don't you come up and give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air with Lynn.
Good evening. Therese from Massachusetts.
Hi.
Dr. Kitai, I had the opportunity of viewing your thought-provoking documentary at the X Conference.
Oh, great.
Your film noted the efforts of former Phoenix Councilwoman Frances Emma Barwood to respond to citizen requests for an investigation by authorities of the Phoenix Lights. My first question, Doctor, do you think that Ms. Barwood's responsible reaction to the citizen's request for an inquiry into the phenomena impacted her career, including Ms. Barwood's subsequent unsuccessful campaign for Arizona Secretary of State? Also, Doctor, your film mentioned the interest among many citizens, including professionals, as to the source and extent of the Phoenix Lights. My second question, is citizen awareness of and interest in Arizona sightings continually increasing due to your documentary's great success and also the ongoing research being conducted by you and other ufologists, including ICAR's D. Joseph Andrew and David Andrew? Thank you, Doctor, for your responses and a fine documentary.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate your questions, and they're wonderful questions. I'll get to Barwood in a second because she really is a major player in this. To answer your question, and actually it goes back to what we were starting, you had asked before, Joe, as well, what's really amazing to me and very rewarding is that the mindset, particularly of the residents in Arizona, has really changed since the book came out and certainly since the documentary came out. We had sold out houses, and in fact I had a call today from the Harkins movie complex. We were going to be showing the updated documentary because I had three recent sightings actually in the summer after we finished the documentary in May, June, and August 30th. It were incredible sightings that I've now incorporated in the documentary and children as well, which is my passion. And at any rate, we're going to be showing it on March 12th, which is the day before the 9th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights for anyone in the Phoenix area at the Harkins Shea Movie Theater on Scottsdale Road here in Phoenix, and I'm sure we'll be posting something on the website about it, thephoenixlights.net. But at any rate, the mindset here of people, not only, as I mentioned, there's a fellow from Luke Air Force Base that asked for a transfer to Luke Air Force Base. He's in the documentary just to see the Phoenix Lights, and he has been photographing them, and other people have moved here purposely to see the Phoenix Lights, and they are photographing them and witnessing things. The other thing that's really been very rewarding, not only the open-mindedness of many people here that are realizing that things are happening and they're looking up. They're looking for these phenomena to occur, and they're seeing things, and some people are and some people aren't, and frustrated that they're not. A lot of people want to see them and haven't yet, but you know, I assure them if you keep looking up, you're gonna catch something, because they're, you know what, we usually don't look up. We just don't. And you know, if you're aware and you educate yourself and you know what to look for, you may just see something. And on the other side, which is really amazing to me and wonderful, and maybe because I was so hooked into the media doing health reporting, and when I did come forward as myself, and again, this isn't about me, but you know, I'm trying to do my best to get the information out there. If people listen, then terrific. And the media listened. The media really embraced my work and really embraced what I was doing, and it's helped me such a great deal to get the information out there, to make people more aware. And the mindset has changed in the media here, particularly locally in the Phoenix area, to be much more open to listen to other people, which is fabulous. They are not, you know, you talked about the ridicule and all that. That is really dissipating, particularly here, and I hope that that spreads like a pebble in a pond elsewhere, because people are seeing things. People are experiencing things, and sure, yes, most can be explained, but it's enough with telling people they're crazy and blowing it off and ridiculing people. Let's just look at it for what it is, and if there is an explanation, terrific. But if there's not, let's at least acknowledge that there's not, and that it's time that we do move forward and look at this and study it. That unfortunately hasn't happened enough worldwide, but it is happening more and more. And again, other countries are really, I mean, there's Belgium in the 90s had similar sightings, and the Belgium came to the United States and said, "Are you doing this?" The United States flatly denied that they were. Well, Belgium worked with civilians and worked with the university, and that's happening in Mexico as well and other countries as well. So China has an elite group of scientists studying these things. That says something. They're studying these unexplained phenomena quite seriously, and that's terrific, and it's got to happen more and more here as well, and hopefully at university level. I'm certainly going to try to help in that behalf. In fact, I was just asked to be on the advisory board of the Exopolitical Institute. It's really a group that wants to educate people. I mean, they want to promote research into the key factors here and the evidence of extraterrestrial or unearthly presence. They want to promote the awareness and understanding of all evidence concerning different extraterrestrial races and their impact on the social, economic, and cultural political processes. They want to promote peaceful cooperation with these unearthly beings that evidence suggests that, you know, are aligned with the advancement of global peace and human empowerment and human sovereignty, and prepare humanity. And that was one of the major reasons I came forward, because nobody's preparing anybody. I mean, it's, you know, there's so much denial here in the United States and in our culture, and trying to either blow it off, and I'll get to Frances Barwood, because she was a big player in this and really helped bring this out into the open. But someone has to prepare. We have to start preparing humanity for open interaction with these other human other intelligent beings. And whose existence is supported by credible evidence, such as my own, and assist in public dissemination of the technologies and of the information, and promote full disclosure, obviously, is important, but, we really have to start, getting it together both within each individual to get that information to the public, as well as to start to formulate what we're going to do when we do have open contact with these beings. So I think the Exopolitical Institute is going in the right direction. There's other groups, you know, certainly that are doing wonderful work and just trying to educate, which is really important. Now, going back to Frances Barwood, I'm so glad that you brought her name up, because I have to tell you, I could not have come forward if it wasn't for Frances in so many ways, because she had constituents, and she did not see the sighting on March 13th, but she had hundreds, I mean, she estimates 1,000 at least, of her constituents calling her, because after the mass sighting, which was interesting in itself, because, again, whoever did this wanted to be seen. And they were seen by thousands, tens of thousands of people here in Arizona and elsewhere, as we alluded to in Nevada, as well as New Mexico, on the night of March 13th, 1997. And then there was no investigation or explanation. In fact, when people went to their congressmen and the senators and so forth, and the governor and the mayors, it was like, what? Something happened on March 13th? And come on, I mean, we're talking a major, major event occurred throughout the state that really touched people very deeply, and they're blowing everybody off. Well, it was very frustrating for anyone that had witnessed these phenomena, just for the fact that there was no investigation, no explanation, until Frances Barwood came forward at a council meeting, and she was also vice mayor, by the way, of Phoenix at the time. And just innocently, because she had had so many of her constituents call her office, just innocently asked, why isn't there, you know, maybe we should look into this. And she was blasted. I mean, talk about ridicule, talk about in the paper with cartoons, and it was just horrible. I mean, I saw this firsthand. I saw what was done to her, what was done to other witnesses that came forward. It was horrifying. It was really very, very not only unprofessional, but it was awful. I mean, it was an awful situation where anyone that wanted to come forward with information, and I was so glad that I had stayed anonymous doing my homework, because anyone that came forward, including Frances Barwood, was blasted by the media. And at any rate, she didn't give up. She was a really strong lady, and she knew that people had seen something and experienced something that was real to them and that needed to be investigated, and she really kept on it. And to the point where she ran for Secretary of State, and one of the biggest parts of her platform was getting answers to the Phoenix Lights event. And boy, talk about being blasted. I mean, they were saying that she was from Neptune and she was seeing little green men. And again, she didn't even see the event itself or even profess that she had anything to do with believing there were UFOs or anybody visiting us. She just wanted answers to what her constituents had asked her. And, you know, that's all you could ask from an elected official. And, again, she was really, really blasted in the media. And it came to the point where, you know, not only did she lose that election, but certainly the people such as myself that knew that something was amiss and that something really needed to be investigated really treasured her her fortitude and even till today. I mean, she has moved out of the Phoenix area into upstate Arizona, but she's still involved. She's in our documentary. She's wonderful in the documentary, and she tells it like it is. And she went to McCain. She tried to find out, you know, from big sources what was going on, and she just, you know, was stonewalled. And you know, as everybody else was, including myself, I called around to every military base.
Gotta stop you right there because we got to go to break. So I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 16. I'm here with Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Lynn Kitty, and when we return from the break, we'll start taking some.
Talent.
Technology.
Talent.
Technology.
Talent.
Technology.
Talent.
Technology.
Talent.
Technology.
Talent.
Technology.
Talent. Talent.
Talent.
Talent. Talent.
Talent.
Talent. Talent. Talent. Talent.
The Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
SRN 1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Good evening, and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 6. I want to welcome back Dr. Lynn Kitai. You know, we were having several interesting conversations tonight, but I'm going to go ahead and get some more questions in, because if we don't, they will be writing me nasty letters for weeks. I'm telling you, they do that. They get really upset with me if I don't take questions. I get really nasty emails.
Well, we don't want that, and I love answering people's questions. So
a lot of our audience, especially in a virtual audience, a lot of them are researchers themselves, take advantage of the show, because it is not, it's not like UFO 101 or Abduction 101. We go way beyond what you'll hear on most radio shows. We allow for a much higher amount, a much higher level of information to be given out on the show than you will. This is information, sometimes you'll hear stuff on here you won't even hear at the conferences.
No, that's excellent, because, you know, it's gotten to the point with myself and I'm sure a lot of your listeners where it's not, you know, do they exist, if they exist, it's, hey, come on, let's move forward, they exist, let's get to the next phase and, you know, find out what's going on, why they're here, and start getting some dialogue going.
No, you have the close encounter syndrome, right? Just so you know that. We coined that term about 5 years. Did you ever see the movie Close Encounters?
Of course. And in fact, it was funny because it wasn't until a couple of years after the mass sighting that I saw it again after the, you know, seeing it in the 70s, and this was in the 90s, and it blew me away how very close Spielberg really had it with the amber orbs, and I could really relate to Richard Dreyfuss, I have to tell you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why we call it, that syndrome now, because it just, it's so weird that, you know, they did it in the movie. You know, well, Spielberg could be a, we don't know.
Well, I had heard that he actually had an experience and a sighting in Arizona when he was a Cub Scout, when he was a kid up north.
But he did a good job with Taken as well, and I mean, he wasn't, you know, giving that story away, but he did a good job with it. I gotta give him credit for that. But let me grab some questions, because I know we're chit-chatting and they're gonna shoot me. So Joshie Isha, I see you sitting there patiently, been waiting to their hands, been sitting up there for about an hour now. So why don't you come up and give us your first name and location, and you're live in the air with Dr. Lynn.
Hi, this is Rachel in Norfolk, Virginia, and my question for the doctor is, well, first I agree that the exopolitics people are doing a really great thing, but what I want to know is, does the doctor have any idea from her research exactly who, what race the occupants of the Phoenix Lights could be, what their intention is? I'm hearing the doctor speaking a lot about enlightenment and awareness and everything, but I'm also familiar with the opinions of, like, Dr. Jacobs and others like that. So how has the doctor determined, if at all, who the occupants are and what their intention is? Thank you.
Good question, Rachel. I have to tell you that, and in the documentary we do say this, if there is one species or race visiting us, there's many. And each with their own agenda, their own reason for being here, and, you know, we don't know that yet. That's why it's so important to move forward and start addressing these things and really starting to communicate or trying to communicate to find out what is really going on. And it's funny because David Jacobs actually is at my alma mater, Temple University. I went to undergrad and medical school there, and he's a history professor there. And, you know, everyone comes to the forum, and I respect everyone's opinion. Everyone comes to the forum with a different background, with a different belief system, with a different reality, a cube, that, you know, whether it's upbringing or religious belief or whatever, that they're bringing to the table. And I have to say that, you know, sometimes when people react a certain way or have, their own, belief system incorporated into their conclusions, you know, that's fine for them, but it may be skewed, it may not be skewed, I don't know that. I give everybody the benefit of the doubt and try to look for the positive, and that's one of the things I have to tell you, again, I mean, if there's one visiting us, there's many. And there may be things going on that aren't that pleasant. I mean, in every society, there's good and there is evil. What I've seen and what I've learned from the Phoenix Lights event particularly, I have to tell you, there was not one, and I'm talking, now this is 9 years later almost, in March it'll be 9 years, there has not been one report, and I have been intimately involved with the investigation, with the investigators. If there was any report at all, Dr. Ruth Hover, who was a psychologist, PhD psychologist in Fountain Hills, who actually has runs Encana groups for like 20 years, has been dealing with individuals who are seeing these orbs, have had other experiences. And across the board, even if someone to them, and again, everyone's coming with a different background and a different belief system and also a different reaction. I mean, some people are very frightened by things, and they may react in a frightened way. Some people may react to different things that happen to them in an angry way, and they may, you know, even though the experience may not be that bad to them, you know, how dare they do such a thing? While other people, such as myself, I include myself in this group, are very open to things and look for the positive in things, and they're going to have a positive experience. And the more you look at the data and you see, you know, somebody's personality comes into the fray here when you're dealing with these unexplained phenomena, because we don't have any reference for them. We haven't been taught about them. We don't really have any way to put them into our own lifestyle that's an easy way, because we haven't been taught about it. It's really been kept so secret and denied, and you're crazy and all these ridicule things that a lot of people are even afraid to tell their own family or confide in anyone and keep it inside. That's why, to me, there's so much healing to be had here, just to be able to share. And that's really one of the major reasons I came forward, because it's time we shared and got this out in the open. But anyway, going back to the Phoenix Lights event, there is not one report of anyone being harmed, of anyone being frightened, of anyone being hurt in any way, anyone being abducted. Not one report. So you have to look at the data, and that's what I'm trying to do as a scientist, is just look at the data and see, what do we have here? We have an event that happened not only statewide, but even out of the state, but statewide for sure, over hours, and we have witnesses that have come forward since the documentary came out that have shared that they saw these things as early as 5 p.m., on March 13th and as late as 2 a.m. So we're talking many hours of these phenomena, and we really actually came down to a parade happening. It was, you know, whether these things could morph into different forms or whether they were lights attached to something or they were real craft or materialized or whatever, because certainly people, including a crewman from Luke Air Force Base, allegedly called, I mean, he did call, the UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport, about 3 a.m. the next morning, and reported in detail, I mean, intricate detail, that was recorded, the names and the numbers and the ranks of pilots and so forth that actually were sent out to intercept this object as it went over right in the middle of Phoenix, 7th Avenue and Indian School, for anybody that knows the terrain here. And as the jets got close to it, and supposedly they did get gun camera film of it, as they got close to it, it just blinked out and totally freaked out the pilot. And this crewman that called the UFO Reporting Center said that he was one of the people that actually carried the pilot, who was really shaken up out of the craft. So if anything, the military was shaken up. All the witnesses, I should interject it, and I do address it in the book and certainly share with people. 6 months before the mass sighting on March 13th, 1997, the movie Independence Day had come out. And, you know, people had a mindset. I mean, there is definitely a mindset happening here, and I think we've really been ingrained with threat, and it's they're going to harm us, and, you know, Hollywood has really promoted that genre. But at any rate, children, interestingly enough, were usually the first ones to see it when they were outside as a family and alerted the parents to it. And they were initially fearful because of their mindset with Independence Day. And, you know, I had parents share with me that, and the kids themselves, that, you know, they were jumping up and down. Independence Day is this massive, massive mile to 2 mile wide. Let me interject that too. We had, wonderful, realtors, very credible realtors out in Carefree who happened to be at an area that had stakes in the ground, and as this thing went right over them, they estimated it was closer to 2 miles wide from the stakes in the ground. As these phenomena were coming close to the children, they were frightened. They were screaming, Independence Day, Independence Day. But as the phenomena, and this is a really interesting thing to me, as the phenomena got closer, and even on top of these people, where some of them said they could throw a rock at it was so low, a calmness came over everyone. An excitement that, oh my God, this is such an incredible moment. How fortunate I am to be at this moment looking at these phenomena. I mean, we're talking a joy and just a real appreciation that something so unusual and unearthly, and I have to say that because over and over again, the witnesses have shared with me that they knew in their heart that whatever this was, it was not of this world. And yet no one was afraid. Once it got close, even the children wanted to run after it, wanted their parents to get in the car and follow it. And that to me is really intriguing. That is, talk about transformation. I mean, we're talking a transformation right at that moment of when it was happening, that we have this mindset so ingrained by the military, government, Hollywood, whatever, that it's a fearful thing, it's a threat, and yet when it comes close, a calmness takes over everyone. And people knew after, and even to this day, I mean, I still have witnesses sharing with me how excited they were and how they felt, how fortunate they were to have experienced this. And other people that didn't experience it, that were at home or didn't see it, were disappointed that they didn't see it. But even more importantly, to answer Rachel's question, what has been said to me as far as the beings, if they are beings, that are navigating these aircraft, from the investigators that I've spoken with, it seems that this phenomena, these craft, are new. That they are the latest, either they're an advancement of some civilization that's been here for a while, or they just discovered us. But they're different from what has been here before.
I gotta interject now. You must be dealing with them rookies over at MUFON, I can see.
I'm sorry?
Said you must be dealing with these rookies over at MUFON. I was a MUFON investigator for about 10 years, by the way, and I have to tell you, for UFOs and abductions, we consider them rookies, okay? Main reasons why is it's like the egg-type craft that you're talking about, the egg shape. Actually, you can find it back in history probably about 5,000 years.
Oh, yeah, and the orbs, too. I mean, the orbs have been here, so maybe it's a combination of spirit world and ETs. I mean, I'm not saying what it is. I'm just saying that it is.
The way of knowing now, got to be careful with the word orb, too, because we found out that some of these craft have what we call spheres on them. They're more like a probe. They tend to be solid in shape, but they have their own color. They're luminous to themselves with their own color inside of them. And they come in a lot of shapes, sizes, and colors. But
right.
The reason we started calling them spheres is because all these people out there taking pictures of those, you know, those wispy orb things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an entirely different thing. And I don't want people confusing them now, because now people, you know, you say the word orb, 99 people automatically assume you're talking about them little wispy things, and that's not what I'm talking about. These objects are quite solid. They're visibly solid. You can tell this is a solid object that's in the air, and we've had reports of them from anywhere from 2 inches to a mile across. So the thing about it is there's a lot of them out there, but they do seem to be some kind of probe. I mean, most of them that we get reports on are usually in a size range of 10 to 15 feet across. Not really craft size. It's not really something we would consider someone or something flying around in with any comfort at all.
Right.
So we're assuming, which is not a good thing to do, but we're assuming they're probably some type of probe, especially by the way they act, because they seem to dock, undock, clip their cells onto the ships, unclip their cells off, go off, maybe hover over something for a while, and then they'll come back.
Exactly.
Investigating something.
Exactly, and that's, yeah, that was the feeling that I got, Joe, when they were close. And they did look about 6 feet, maybe 10 feet. I mean, I was, you know, guesstimating how big they were, but I had to interject that yes, they looked solid. They looked like the light itself. It didn't illuminate anything. It didn't glare. The light was self-contained, and that's why I call it an orb. But the main thing is that it felt like there was an intelligence there.
Yeah, it does. But see, that's another point I wanted to bring up, because I know we got to get some more quick questions in. But the thing about it is, when you talk about the calm feeling, we call it the it's almost like you've been instantly programmed. That's why I was talking about the syndrome earlier, about the alien syndrome earlier, because it seems like for a moment when your eyes make contact with this thing, you're downloaded. That's the only way I can describe it. There's no other way for me to describe this, because I have seen attitude change in people that there is no way this should have happened under any circumstances at all. Some of these people are so tight that it's not even funny, and you would have never, ever, and if you would have talked to them before they had seen this, they would have told you you were nuts.
Right.
That lost them, I don't care what kind of pictures you have, what's going on, you are just crazy.
Right.
And then they'll see it, and then, I can understand seeing it, you know, being profound, but it's to the point where it's more than that.
Exactly.
You know, I've watched people dedicate their lives, myself included. I can't, you know, I've been doing it.
I hear you. It changed my life.
You know, I put my career on the line many times over this, and I finance quite a lot of this out of pocket every year, between $20,000 and $40,000 a year I spend on this. So
I can believe it.
You know, I tell people all the time, if you're getting into ufology to make money, you done found the wrong place.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, this, you know, and that's the thing I've learned, and certainly I know myself. I mean, this comes from your heart. This is an inquiry, a personal commitment to, you know, find out what's going on, and also if you're so inclined, to educate, which I am, and certainly you are.
Well, let me take this quick call on the line, and then we'll get to some more in the room, because I see they got them stacked up, and we're going to start a war here. But I see we got Rachel from Virginia on the line. So, Rachel, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, well, you're live and air with Dr. Lynn Kitar.
Okay. My question was, I had already asked the question about who the doctor thought the beings were in that who were occupying the craft, and she started to answer, and she mentioned that she thought they were different than any other beings who had been here before.
But then
there was an interruption. I was wondering if she could describe exactly what she's talking about. Why does she think that?
Like I said, the investigators that were really intimately involved with this investigation, that's their opinion. And they've been involved with ufology for 20, 30 years. I'm a novice here. I just know what I saw and know what I feel, and I've tried to document things as professionally and credibly as I can, and share them that way as well. You know, one of the things that I have to say is I don't know who they are. I just know that they are. I mean, I know that it is. And it could be time travelers, it could be spirit world, it could be extraterrestrials from other planets. I don't know that. I don't know that. But what, you know, when I did the investigation and I really tried to find out what others think that they are, what kept coming back to me is that these are advanced beings. They certainly are benevolent, because with the technology that they had, if they wanted to do something malevolent, they certainly could have done it very easily, particularly when you hear about the crewmen, you know, the pilots that try to intercept them and then it just blinked out, and et cetera. I mean, they certainly touched enough people in Arizona just from one night that, you know, if they wanted to cause havoc or panic or harm anyone, they could have, and they didn't. There just is not one report of that. That's all I can say. So whoever this is trying to not only wake us up to their presence, but I have to say this, and Rachel, I appreciate you asking the question, and even when I present the documentary, I mean, this is coming from my heart. I hope that the work that I'm doing with the book and the documentary is doing what they're doing. They are touching one person at a time to really be awake, to awaken to the presence of other earthly beings, that we're not alone, and also to wake up to what we're doing to the earth and to each other. That is a very, very important message here. because not only did I write something in the book, 1 month after the mass sighting, and this is in my book, and really sent me off on this journey, which is now almost 9 years, 1 month after the mass sighting, to the day, I had an experience during the night which was quite profound, which I won't get into, and I hope you enjoy it in the book. But as I lay there after this experience, thoughts so foreign from my from anything I'd ever thought of before in my entire life were streaming through my mind, and I thought, I have to write this down. And I went downstairs in the dark, I picked up a pen and a pencil, and I started writing with my eyes closed, what some people, I guess, would call automatic writing. And I just wrote and wrote and wrote. And if you want to learn the message, read it in my book. Because what I wrote that night, and I didn't read it again until the next morning and realize what I had written, and those words really sent me off on the journey to find out what they meant. And essentially, it really was a message to say that we are masters of our own destiny, and if we don't wake up to what we're doing to ourselves and to the earth, we're going to destroy ourselves. We have the choice.
Rachel, did that answer your question, Bruce?
Sure did. Thank you very much.
Calling in the Wake Up USA. You know what? Let's see if we can see one more quick one. We're getting close to the break, but let's just see. John Cools has been patiently waiting, so John Cools, why don't you come up and give us your first name and location, and you're live in the air with Dr. Lynn Keaton.
Hey, thank you, Gojo. It's a great honor to hear Lynn Tay of this documentary. I've seen the documentary too. Wonderful.
Thank you.
I'm from the Netherlands. I'm a full-time UFO investigator for 15 years now.
Good
for
you.
I have also a complete archive of about 200 VHS tapes on UFOs alone, worldwide. And my question is, when the governments in the world will disclose that UFOs are for real and they are here, and their way of presenting the aliens is very one-sided, what would you do if it's very one-sided? And another thing I want to say is that coming up Friday the 13th, I will interview Joe Montaldo on UntoldMysteries.com.
Uh-huh.
So for people who are interested to listen about the experience of Joe Montaldo himself, go to UntoldMysteries.com. Okay, thank you very much.
Good question. You know, I have gotten past the government, the military, because I alluded to it before. I tried so hard to do my homework with them as well. I mean, I called every military base in the state and talked to top people there to find out what was going on, and they were more interested in taking a look at my photographic data than giving an explanation for it. In fact, in my book, I do mention a couple of almost comical conversations that, you know, they made a joke out of it. I mean, you know, one lieutenant says, hey, whoever knows, you know, the only people that know who did this is God and whoever did it. You know, they were just as curious. So, you know, the right hand seems not to know what the right left hand is doing in a lot of the cases. This is really important to know, too, that for months, there was no investigation, no explanation. And again, I did my homework, so I more and more I was believing that something is really going on here. And until 5 months after the fact, now 5 months passed until a USA Today article came out, front page, announcing our sighting in Arizona to the world. And we were deluged by media from all over the world. And once they started talking to the witnesses, and again, it's time we start listening to the witnesses, because the stories were so detailed and so heartfelt. And the media themselves from across the world said, why isn't there an investigation? I mean, something really happened here that touched these people profoundly. Why isn't there an explanation? And I have to tell you that the military and government were so pushed at that point to come up with something. And I get a call one afternoon from the head of the PR at the Air National Guard, who I had talked to a couple times over the phone. And she says, oh, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March. And I'm open to anything. Fine, tell me what they are. She says, would you believe that no one ever looked at the log of visiting Air National Guard? Now, this is 5 months. With all the hoopla and everything that was going on, no one looked at the log of visiting Air National Guard. And the Maryland Air National Guard was in town sending off flares at the Barry Gold Water Range, so that must be what some people saw. Now, that was her explanation. Now, number one, I had never told them what I had, just that I had some pictures. And I said to her, I said, well, when was the Air National Guard in town, Maryland Air National Guard? She said, March 1st to the 15th. I said, so they weren't in town in January, right? She said, oh, no. I said, well, I have pictures of the same formation in the same location 2 months before the mass sighting. Who did that? And she said, well, you never told me that. Okay. And I said, well, besides that, I said, how can you explain people seeing a craft and these lights that seem to be attached to something mile to 2 mile wide traversing the entire state over hours? How could that possibly be flares? And she said, oh, well, you know what, I have call coming in, I'll get back to you. Well, I'm still waiting. So the next...
Look, Lynn, I got to stop you. I got somebody on the line. I want to get his question in so you can be thinking about it at the break. Because I know we're getting ready to go to break here in about a minute. So, Mike, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Mike from California. You're speaking with Dr. Lynn Kitale. Go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Lynn Kitale.
Hi, Mike.
I had a question. Being a medical doctor, have you talked to any of your colleagues, possibly even psychiatrists, and had their professional opinion on this? Have they said, like, mass hysteria? Did any of them watch the lights with you or see the lights? Any kind of a professional opinion from a medical or psychiatric point of view? Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, you're welcome, Mike. Great question. Because I have to tell you, I was really surprised myself. I kept very, very quiet about what I was doing. I was really, you know, clandestinely researching, and very few people knew who I was for real. I mean, and people knew that Dr. X had these pictures out there, but nobody knew who Dr. X was. And when I would go to medical conventions, particularly, this is where I started to really realize that there are so many people out there that have experienced something and behind closed doors. I mean, they're afraid to talk about it. And, you know, when my friends in the medical profession would ask what I'm doing now, because I was always doing some kind of a project for the community, usually on health issues, I said, well, you're not going to believe this, but, and when I would share with them, I would say that... two times out of three, or nine times out of ten, either the wife or the husband would take me aside and for an hour or more would tell me about an experience that they had.
And I got to stop you, Boo, so hold on. Got to go break. I'll let you finish back, I promise. Everyone, I want you to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalba. I'm sitting and speaking with Dr. Lynn Kitale, and as soon as we return, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Boo.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Join the Lady CB Hour live for top music showcases Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, here on Stardust Radio, where technology and talent meet. That's www.stardustradio.com.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. I'm going to let Dr. Linky Ty go back to answering her question since I rudely cut her off at the break.
That's okay. Mike, to finish answering your question, my brother's a psychiatrist in Delaware. And when I first told him about this, he made a big joke out of it and kind of blew it off. And again, everybody's coming from a different place, and it's going to take some people longer to let it sink in. Some people just won't be able to deal with it. And that's okay. I mean, if somebody wants to feed into a flare theory and it gives them comfort, so be it. You know, it's going to take people, some people longer than others. But what was really interesting is once I compiled my data, and my brother, as well as other people, really looked at it, it blew them away. I mean, what could they say? The data speaks for itself. And I have to tell you that, you know, proudly, that it's really helped people in the medical profession, as well as other professionals that I've met with. Once they really look at the data, once they read the book or they see the documentary, and they look at the data, and there's so much more data out there. It's not just mine, but, you know, certainly I hope that mine opens the door for a lot of people. They're curious, and it really helps most people. And again, there are going to be some people that just can't deal with it, and they're going to be closed-minded, and that's their choice. It is a choice. So be it. But for those that are open-minded about it, and I have found that a lot of the people in the medical profession, particularly the ones that I've dealt with through the years, trusted my work. I mean, they knew that I was going to do my homework, whatever I was going to do. And if I'm telling somebody that, hey, you know, take a look at this, there's something here, they take it seriously. They know I'm not fooling around, and they know I'm grounded, and that whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to put my best into it to find out what's going on. So in that behalf, I've been very fortunate, and I really have had the medical profession so far, and I hope it continues, really be open-minded and open their arms to me. And I received dozens of emails, I have to tell you this, from professors at university level from around the world, physicists and optical scientists and astrophysicists and people that know that something's going on, and they really appreciate that, and people even studying near-death experience, and they appreciate that someone of credence has come forward to say that it's okay to talk about it and get this out in the open. And for that, not only am I grateful, but I think that's really an important step in this whole process.
You know, what's interesting is inside of our organization recently, we've had a large membership of teachers joining the organization from all walks.
Yes, yes.
Way into the college. We have several professors that's joined the organization, but we have regular everyday, you know, school teachers, elementary school teachers.
Oh, that's great. And that's the thing. I mean, my biggest hope for your audience out there, if anybody can help me in that behalf, my biggest hope, and again, this is my passion for almost 30 years now, because I produce video and workbook curriculums on vital health issues for the classroom, K on up through college, that are now being distributed by Discovery Education. And my biggest hope is that I can get this information in the classroom. Because there is a chunk of history missing from our history books, and we need to start filling up that gap. And young people are so thirsty for that. I certainly found out. I have more kids emailing me and coming to the screenings that we're having, bringing their whole families from junior high, doing book reports on the book and so forth. It's really important to start educating young people. And I hope that the Phoenix Lights Project can get into school soon.
Well, you know, it's interesting because some of the teachers have been finding creative ways to get this into the classroom. I've also found that we've had several clergymen join the organization, which I found very interesting.
Yes.
They have found ways to introduce this. As a matter of fact, someone, we have an online support group that we, and citing area that we have, that we let people come and chat. And occasionally they'll come in and talk about, you know, how they're talking to the church or relating this to the religion. And it's really weird, but it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And we're really talking about, even above organized religion, a spirituality connection between everyone. There is a connection which you learn when you really start understanding this whole phenomena. There is a connection between everyone, between everything, that we really have to start acknowledging.
But you see, that should be basic understanding from very early planet, because everybody knows we're made up of the same matter or or stuff or whatever you want to call it, but we are made of the same thing. Everything, as far as we know, everything in this universe is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and I think whoever is visiting us is trying to wake us up to that.
I'm hoping they're trying to do something, but let me grab another quick question.
Mental way.
I see we got D-Dragon patiently waiting with her hand up. So, D-Dragon, why don't you come up and give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air.
Thank you, Joe. Dr. Kitai, this is Dee, and I'm also in Arizona. I'm the Southwest Regional Director for ICAR.
Oh, great.
I have a two-part question for you. Number one, should be quick and easy to answer, is are you going to be showing your documentary again here in the Phoenix area again soon? And if so, where and when? And my second question is, do you have a rough estimate of the direction from your house that you were getting pictures of these lights? They're still being seen and videotaped and photographed today. My husband and I, just this last September, got almost 3 minutes of footage of the lights.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Yeah, actually, and I hope, you know, people start spreading the news that I just spoke today with Harkins Movie Theaters. They actually premiered the original Phoenix Lights documentary last March for the 8th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights event. This year, they've asked us to again screen it on March the 12th, which would be the day before. It's Sunday, March 12th, the day before the 9th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights event. I'm sure we'll be letting people know what time. Last year we did it, I think, at 1, 4, and at 7. And they were standing room only. It was just unbelievably overwhelming response. And what's really cool about this year is that when we showed the premiere, it was a work in progress. We really have been working quite diligently. I had to give up my position at the Arizona Heart Institute as chief clinical consultant of the Wellness and Imaging Center to really do the job that needed to be done with the documentary. And not only have we condensed it and really tightened it up, but we have added children. We have three new sightings. Actually, we had a sighting, incredible sighting, May, June, and August 30th that I captured myself that we've added to the documentary, as well as some other neat stuff throughout the documentary. So it's really a totally revised edition that is not for sale. The original collector's edition is available on our website, thephoenixlights.net, if anyone would like to procure that at this point. And there's actually added information there some of it we've taken out for the new edition, which, by the way, Warner Brothers is very interested, and Samuel Goldwyn Films and some other distribution companies are very interested in distributing it. But at this point, the one screening we know we're going to be having in the Phoenix area will be at the Scottsdale Harkins Theater at Scottsdale and Shea on March the 12th to celebrate the 9th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights event.
That sounds excellent in itself.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really exciting. And again, this version is not for sale. It's going to be an exclusive screening, so I hope that people can come and enjoy it.
That sounds like, well, I wish I could come and enjoy it.
You're invited.
Oh, well, I'll get out to Arizona, but if I'm out there, though, well, I know what, but I know there's a strong Arizona turnout in the virtual auditorium today. Now, I won't know what's listening to us radio side for a couple of days, but...
Well, I applaud the caller and others in the Arizona area that are really out there looking, and they're photographing. I mean, the military tries to confuse the issue, which they tried to do with the flare thing. And I have to say, just as an aside, to finish off what we were talking about before, when they came out with this flare explanation, which, you know, really the media ran with that one. And it was just that maybe some people saw some flares. And I have no doubt that they probably were sending off flares just to divert people from the true unknowns. But besides that, fine. I mean, hey, you know, I'm a logical sciences person. If they're flares, do it again. Reenact it. Now, I know that I had pictures 2 months before the mass sighting, and when we went back to the pictures from 2 years before the mass sighting, the same formation in the same location. And to answer the question again, we're looking south towards South Mountain and the Estrellas. And Estrella means star in Spanish, and the native indigenous peoples of the area actually call the area Gateway to the Stars. and that's what Astraea means. So, which is very interesting in itself. How did it get its name? And of course they've shared that this has been happening for centuries. But, the point is that, you know, something's going on. It's been going on for a long time, and, it's time we get it out in the open, and it's great that people are looking up and are taking note and photographing things. It took them, you know, with great persuasion, not only Francis Barwood, who announced it in the paper, fine, if you say it's flares, reenact it. But many others, such as myself, were asking, fine. I mean, if it's military and it's flares and that's your explanation, reenact it, do it again. Well, it took 3 years, 3 years later, right before the third anniversary of the Phoenix Lights event, it's plastered in a newspaper, on radio and so forth, the three Air National Guards were coming into town to send off flares to show everybody the Phoenix Lights. Now, whether they thought that we had forgotten what they looked like, or they wanted to defuse it and finally put it to rest, or whatever, they were supposed to do a two-week run. By the second day, they scrapped the whole thing because it was a joke. I mean, it really, what they were sending off was so significantly different than what we saw, and people let them know that. The witnesses let them know that, and the media let them know that, that, you know, it just put that to rest. And that, you know, to me, that was their shot. I mean, they announced it. They were saying, this is the Phoenix Lights. Well, it wasn't. And that was their shot to prove that it was. So after that, it really pushed me forward, you know, along my journey to say, hey, something's really going on here, and this needs to be shared.
It amazes me, first off, since 9-1-1, I don't know if you've caught this yourself or not, but since 9-1-1, it's probably the only good thing that's come out of it, is a lot more people are looking up. Since then, we've got our sightings almost quadrupled since then.
Mm. Now, why do you think that is? Do you think it's because people are looking up, or do you think it's because and being more aware, or do you think they've actually increased?
Well, you know, that's the thing. I think it's kind of a mix. I really think part of it is that more people were looking up, at least initially, because, you know, they were worried about an airplane dropping out on their heads. So I do think initially they were thinking about that. But I think that the sightings actually increased because we've got some new hot zones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Phoenix area has always been a hot zone, well, at least it has been for quite a long time, so has the several areas in Florida and some places up in Washington State and a few other places in the country. But recently, we've got zones like, I got a picture about 2 weeks ago, almost identical to one of yours out of Flagstaff.
Wow, great.
Interesting photo, and we'll probably publish it sometime in the next week or two.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
It's just, you know, it seems like certain areas that never had activity before are now having activity. And I find that interesting in itself because are they stepping up their program? Are they
right
the job faster? So those are questions that we really need to answer, and it does seem like there is something else going on. I do notice that we have a lot more people coming forward who say they've had contact. We have a lot more people coming forward who say they have sightings. But what amazes me is the people that are coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
Where from doctors to lawyers. We've actually even had a few politicians, which you can't trust them, but they have come forward.
Right, that's great.
A famous one contacted us about 3 years ago out of an Arizona politician, very famous one, too.
Hmm.
I'm going to say his name live on the air, but one day, next time I see you face-to-face, I'll tell you about it. But it's a very interesting thing. He actually had sighted a black triangle. And when he called us about it, I said, no, that belongs to the government, man. You need to go, you're asking the wrong person. It looks like one of those T3BA things, and we told him that we really do believe those belong to the government. Not
mm-hmm.
They show up in typical places like out by Gulf Breeze near the testing ranges, all throughout New Mexico, Arizona,
right.
Nevada, and California, which is the same places the X-117s were being called UFOs. So
mm-hmm.
Those we do believe are flying out there, and we do believe those are ours. Now, all the rest of the stuff, I do not believe we have the technology in any shape, form, or we can't even reproduce the Foo Fighters from 1950, much less anything else that's been photographed recently.
Right, and to have something that's almost 2 miles wide,
I have nothing.
Totally silent, I mean, that's incredible.
Now, if it was floating in the ocean, I'd say maybe we built it, but floating in the sky, I'm not buying it. But let me grab another quick question, because I know we're getting kind of short on time. I see Gossamer's been patiently waiting, so Gossamer, why don't you come up and give us your first name and location, and you're live on there with Dr. Lynn Kitar.
Yes, hello, Dr. Kitar. My name is David. I'm D-Dragon's husband, also Arizona State Director for IACAR. We live here in Glendale. And I got two quick questions. One, I was curious if you've ever had any daylight sightings. I know I've had several daytime
mm-hmm.
sightings myself.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the lights themselves, I had a sighting of them again 2 weeks ago on a Thursday, and one of the lights descended and made a hard right-angle turn to the north. And I'm just curious if any of the lights you've ever seen made abrupt direction changes like that. Thank you.
Right. I have had, and by the way, please email me. You can, anyone that wants to email me, my website, www.thephoenixlights.net, there's the contact right at the bottom of the page. I love to hear from people, and I would love to hear from you and your wife, and certainly have you come to the screening in March. I would love that. But I have to tell you, I have not seen anything zigzagging, although today I had a call from somebody that did. I mean, people are seeing phenomena like that, and I have taken daylight pictures. In fact, I have, oh boy, I have a collection, if I want to tell you, and what we're doing, by the way, and this might not be till the fall, is that I've been asked by ASU, Arizona State University, to actually have an exhibit there, which we are now getting together, and I'm going to be having some of these other pictures that have never been out there before at the exhibit, and a few of them were actually taken. I collect sunsets. I love sunsets, and we have such beautiful sunsets in Arizona. And in 2000, I took 5 rolls of film of sunsets, and it was the holidays. It was November and December, and I didn't get them back till after the holidays. And when I started looking through them, lo and behold, I have in 2 different rolls on 2 different months, November and December, what we would call the cigar-shaped objects that are being seen worldwide during the sunsets. I mean, the sunsets are gorgeous, but right in the same location. I mean, the pictures are amazing because it's the same phenomena in the same location on 2 different rolls in 2 different months. And so I have those and a couple others, daylight pictures. So, yeah, I've taken them during the day as well. And we have footage, by the way, 1 month after the mass sighting from a couple in Rainbow Valley who took these orbs during the day as well, 1 month after the mass sighting. And we have footage from witnesses in Tucson who also took daylight orbs.
You know, it's interesting because we've kind of got it now. We've been doing this so long that we've actually found that certain areas of the country actually are prone to certain types of ships. And actually, we shouldn't even limit it to the country, but actually certain parts of the world seem to be certain parts.
Oh, yeah, they're happening worldwide. I mean, that's for sure. And you know, from what I'm hearing, you know, India is ready to come forward. Brazil is ready to come forward. You know, other countries, Peru, are ready to come forward with this information. And for whatever reason, Mexico certainly has tried to do that. And within weeks of announcing that they're ready to come forward, suddenly there's silence. So, you know, don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but certainly there are many countries who are having experiences and sightings and photographing these things. And, you know, one of these days it's going to come forward.
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a Brazilian investigator, and we got to talking about some of the sightings in South America, but I was asking him how come we haven't heard more information out of Brazil and Mexico, because, you know, they are quite free these days about sharing information. And he said that the Brazilian Air Force, along with one of the other military branches, was sorely disappointed by the amount of people who were interested in this. So I found that interesting.
I can't believe that, because I think there's a lot of people that are interested in these things. But
I've personally written on several occasions, you know, so I don't know. I think somebody's full of BS down there. But let me grab another quick question. I see Dimensional Star's got a hand up and patiently waiting, so why don't you come up and ask us a question?
Hello, Dr. Lynn. I'm sorry, I'm not sure I can pronounce the last name. My name is
Okay,
November,
like a key and a tie.
And a little bit earlier in the show, you briefly mentioned an experience that you had, I believe at night, with images and writing things down. I have done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know if you could describe that experience, because I wanted to see if it was similar to what I had experienced. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to refer you to the book, because I have to say that we'd be on the phone for another 3 hours. The months after the mass sighting, some really bizarre things happened to me that month after the mass sighting happened, including and not limited to the fact that the pictures that I took 2 months before the mass sighting did not turn out at the time. When I went to the developer, that one strip, and thank goodness I kept it, because there were pretty sunsets at the end of that strip, I was told were blank. And I believed the developer. I mean, I didn't know anything about photography, really, and I put it away. 1 week after the mass sighting, and this is just one of the things that happened, after I saw a TV program report with Jim Dellatoso, not only showing my video of the three lights over the city, but other videos and photographs from around the world, and again, that's the first time I heard of it, of these amber orbs in triangle formations, that blew me away. And that night, throughout the night, I had the pressing thought, take the negatives back, take the negatives back. There's something in the negatives. Take the negatives back, take the negatives back. All night long, till the morning, it was like, okay, I'll take the negatives back. I would have never thought to do that. Something definitely made me do that. I mean, and the thought was there all through the night. And when I went to the developer, I handed the negative strip and said, I know they look blank, and, you know, there were only lights, but maybe there's something there. Could you darken it, lighten it, whatever? And about a half hour later, she comes forward with four amazing pictures, which was the start of my realizing that I absolutely caught this formation 2 months before the mass sighting, head on, turning into a V-shape. And then it wasn't until the following December when I went back to the pictures again that I realized that one of those pictures, one of that four, was the first picture that I had taken in 95. I had all along thought that it was from the 97 January sighting, 2 months before the mass sighting. And here I had the same formation in the same location, not only the close orbs that my husband and I saw, but the same formation in the same location in the background as well. I would have never known I had that if I hadn't had that experience that night. The following week, after I, you know, had said to, and I'm giving away the story a little bit, but there's a lot more to the story than March 13th, but the following week after I had conferred with my friends and said, you know, why do I have this stuff? I don't know anything about this topic. Why do I have it? I don't want to have it. I mean, what is this all about? What's going on here? And, you know, they would come back with, you know, Lynn, if anybody can do something credible and professional with this, you can. That's what you've been doing for 25 years, is educating the public on, you know, vital issues. And, you know, if something's going on here, you'll get to the bottom of it. And, you know, that really touched me, because not only did my friends trust me enough to say that, but, you know, I thought, geez, you know, if I'm really supposed to do something productive with this, show me the way. I mean, I just really let it out there to the universe. You know, I'll go wherever this leads. And there's a lot more to this story, because it was right before the lights reappeared that I had realized that I'd had my near-death experience, which I go into detail in the book, and I won't go into that now, but, which, you know, I've trusted for a long time, since I was a kid, that we are not alone. I saw it myself when I was a kid. And I'm getting into to more things. I don't want to leave it open-ended, but there's a lot more to the story. And, you know, I just put it out there. Hey, if this is real and there's somebody out there that's watching and helping us grow, if we listen, I'll listen. Show me the way. And I have to tell you, that experience, and I won't get into it here. I hope you read the book so you can enjoy it, because it's in great detail in the book. But I asked for a sign, and I got a sign, let me tell you. And, you know, from that day forward, I've just gone with the flow. I've dedicated my life to it, because it's come to that. But the puzzle pieces have just fit together, and it's unbelievable, the people I've met, and I believe everything happens for a reason. I've really come to believe that, and there are no coincidences, because I'm just going with the flow here. If it ends tomorrow, I know that I've done, you know, a book and a documentary, a product that people can learn and enjoy and grow from. But, you know, if it's supposed to be bigger than that, I've surrendered. I'm going with it. So I hope you do read the book. It's available on Amazon.com or our website, or certainly the library if you want to go that route. But there is so much more to this story than March 13th, and I hope that you get to read it and enjoy it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I suggest everybody go pick up a copy of the book, read it, enjoy it. If you can catch a documentary, catch it. It was very interesting. You know, for the people that were at the X conference, we had a little advantage there. Oh, speaking of that, too, while I'm thinking about it, I got something that you don't have to email you. I got a copy of something I need to send you from the X. But I'll send that to you sometime in the next days. I'll get it out to you. You should enjoy it. It's the interview we did at the
That's great.
And I'll send that to you as well. But it's been very interesting. Oh, tell them one more time. Give them the website one more time. Tell them right where to find the book, because I know we're getting short on time here. I don't want to forget, so go ahead.
Okay, I really appreciate it, and thank you for letting me be a guest and sharing, because that's what this is all about. Just share the information. It's thephoenixlights.net. And again, I have a contact on there. If anybody would like to email me their experiences, I love to hear from people, and I will get back to you. Also, we have pictures on there. We have the 2-minute trailer to our documentary. You can procure the book or documentary through our website. The book is available certainly on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. I hope people will pick it up and enjoy it, and I love hearing from you, so please let me know, and we will be showing the documentary, and we will be also showing it at different film festivals throughout the year, and I'll be posting that on our website. We were just starting to do that. We won the New York International Film Festival Best Director Award and the 2005 Sci-Fi International Film Festival Best Documentary Award, and we will be showing it not only on March the 12th here in Phoenix, but also at the International UFO Congress Convention in Laughlin. And that is...
At Laughlin, I forgot, I'll be at Laughlin.
Sometime between February 26th and March 4th, that's their conference, and I know that they're going to be showing it there. So I hope people will see it, and that'll be the exclusive version that is not for purchase, but the original collector's item now is available on our website, through our website.
Well, I'll be there. We'll be working press for Wake Up USA, and we'll be working as ICAR at the So we'll be there.
Well, excellent. I hope to see you there.
Oh, yeah. Well, we try to catch as many as we can. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I want everybody to tell Dr. Lynn Kataya good night, because we're going to get out of here in a few minutes. This week's guest is going to be Peter Robbins at Left at East Gate, so this should be interesting. You know, lately we've had some very interesting guests on the show. It's very interesting, the amount of information that has been flowing through here in the last 6 months I have found to be just fascinating in itself. You know, for me, this is an opportunity because I get to interview my fellow ufologists, and that kind of catches them a little bit off guard because I'm a ufologist. Some of them know it, some of them don't. But anyway, guys and girls, on that note, we're just about completely out of time, so I want to thank everyone for listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. I want to invite you to join the Ladies EV Hour shortly following Wake Up USA. Good evening.
If you would like to continue this discussion after the show, join us in ICAR's Pal Talk chat room, UFO Alien Phenomenon, under the Social Issues category.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
Join the Ladies EV Hour, live for Top Music Showcases, Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central. Here on Stardust Radio, where technology and talent meet. That's www.stardustradio.com.